Hey guys, welcome to the 100th episode of Untucked. Before we dive in, we want to thank all of you for listening. We have a lot of fun doing this podcast, and we appreciate the continued support over the course of 100 episodes. Today, we are going to discuss things you shouldn't worry or concern yourself with when it comes to financial planning or financial decision making. And we're also going to chat about decluttering, kind of accumulating stuff and getting rid of it, and how challenging that can be. As always, thank you for listening. The opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not reflect the opinions or views of FC Advisory, the Financial Coach Group, or the New Wealth Project. Nothing discussed on this podcast should be interpreted as investment advice. Welcome to episode 100 of Untucked. This is Megan.
And Mike.
This is Jeff. So in the essence of the beginning of allergy season, have you guys ever heard of aquagenic urticaria?
Assuming you're pronouncing it correctly now.
Yeah, aquagenic urticaria. It's a allergy to water. Like legitimately, some people are allergic to water. They develop painful hives and rashes when their skin is exposed to water. The allergic reaction will develop regardless of the water temperature, and even if the water is purified. They can drink it, it just can't touch their skin.
How do they shower?
I don't know. Could you imagine?
No.
Dude, there's some where people actually get the allergy when they sweat and cry. No. Crazy, right?
That's terrible. Do you grow out of it?
No, it usually begins like when the patient has reached like puberty. Ugh. Yeah. So can you imagine not being allergic to water until you're like 15 or 16 and all of a sudden you take a shower and you break out in hives? I should know like what is, like what percentage of people have it.
That sounds terrible. Oof.
How are your allergies now?
I don't think I have allergies.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you go outside much?
No.
Do you have your windows open?
All the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Any trees near you?
No, not in a tree heavy area.
Okay. Mike, how about you?
I don't know.
Seasonal allergies, do you suffer from those?
I think there are days, yeah. But it's not like for a full month or anything like that.
How about like your allergies can become worse when you drink alcohol? Because alcohol has, what's that word?
Histamine?
Histamines in it, yeah. Weird, right?
You did a fair amount of research on allergies, huh?
Just a little bit, yeah.
So that reminds me, I just read or heard about another weird condition where some people, when they eat or consume carbs, it turns to alcohol in their stomach. So you can imagine. So the one story was this woman was convinced that her husband was like a closet boozer because he was just getting
drunk, eating spaghetti.
He didn't know, like he'd have some pretzels or something, and then all of a sudden he's like falling to the walls. Like
falling to the walls.
Wait, imagine. Do you think you can have like bring it on somehow?
That'd be awesome.
Because you probably don't get hungover. Well, you're consuming less calories.
Assuming you don't eat a loaf of bread.
Why wouldn't you get hungover? Isn't it the same
process? It's not alcohol. Process? Oh, you're saying it turns into
actual alcohol. Like you would blow a point something. Oh. It's in your system. It's in your blood.
Oh, yeah. I'm confused.
So did you fact check this? Just curious.
Yeah, I guess I just assumed it was like you were drunk without any of the other effects of being drunk.
Does the percentage of alcohol content vary on the carb you eat?
I don't know.
Come on, Mike. I mean, if you're gonna bring a fact, bro, you gotta
fun facts.
That's great. Like that wheat loaf is like 35% ABV, but that Wonder Bread is like 12% ABV.
All right. Philly sports.
Philly sports. Do we start? We go like worst to best, or what are we doing? Where do we want to start with this one? Phillies.
We should probably just start with the Sixers.
Okay. Big game tonight.
Yeah. So by the time this one comes out, hopefully they're 2-1 in their first round series against the Knicks.
I heard LeBron came out and said the Sixers got hosed.
Yeah, he was complaining about their refs too, and then mentioned the Sixers game and just said, "What are we doing?" I think he meant league wide.
I don't care for LeBron's opinion on our game. I don't even know why he commented on it.
He was talking about his game.
I get it.
And used that as, I guess, further ammunition.
What happened? There was some bad calls or something?
It was really bad.
Or bad non-call. I don't even know what it was.
So it was probably one of the most physical games I've ever watched, start to finish. And the refs, I thought early on, did a fair enough job kind of dictating the physicality of the game, meaning they let a lot of stuff go. They kind of held their whistle. But there's a point where that gets out of control and people are getting egregiously fouled, and then the whistle's not being called. And at the end of the game, there were a couple of plays in which there was no whistle that ultimately led to possessions that determined the game. And then the NBA has, they call it the last 2 minute report. So after every game, the last 2 minutes are evaluated by a group of officials that weren't actually officiating that game. And I think it's used as a method of like grading the officials, determining how good or how not good they'd been. But they review the last 2 minutes and then they determine like what calls were or were not correct. And they came out and said that there were two fouls on Tyrese Maxey that weren't called. And there was a timeout that the Sixers coach called that he didn't get that he should have gotten. They also said there was a foul called on a Nick that shouldn't have been called. So it was a little bit of both ways. But like all of that comes out and then nothing happens. I don't really understand why they have the report.
I feel like that's really weird because I can see them doing that, but behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why make that public where you're going back and evaluating whatever? That's just weird to me.
Yeah. So technically, you can file grievances. So the Sixers have filed a grievance, which costs like, I think it's $10,000. If the grievance is upheld, they get reimbursed. There have been cases like one in, I think it's like 10,000 grievances where the outcome of the game is changed or they replay the game from a certain point. It's crazy. None of that's going to happen. Not in this case. But there are like ramifications, I suppose, of the information. So yeah, that was game two.
Do they have the same refereeing crew or officiating crew throughout, or does it rotate?
It rotates. Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be different refs tonight than it was on.
I think the purpose of that for the Sixers to move forward with that evaluation post game two is to hopefully get calls their way game three and four.
Yeah, that's
where
I was going, because you know in hockey it's pretty like. You know, if you miss a call, subconsciously you're going to even it up later, right?
Yeah.
There was a game, I don't know, the Kelly Oubre game was probably like 2 months ago now, where one of the Sixers players at the end of the game went up to every ref and called them a bitch and then said their mother's a bitch and then said their grandmother's a bitch. And at the moment, it was
hysterical.
Flames. Like, it was so funny and at the time very, like, warranted because the refs were bad that game. But now it's like that behavior has definitely come back to bite him specifically. Kelly Oubre hasn't gotten a call in 2 months. And now it feels like the Sixers are just definitely not going to get – they're not going to get good calls. They'll get fairly ref games, hopefully, but they're not going to get whistles.
I'm not necessarily pissed off about it. Like, Tyrese Maxey gets a rebound, gets fouled. Nick Nurse is calling timeout. Joel Embiid's calling timeout. They let it all go. Ball gets stolen from Tyrese Maxey. The other team hits a three-pointer, and then like they go on to win the game.
Well, Maxey got tackled. Right. He didn't just lose the ball. He was tackled to the ground.
So I'm not upset about the non-call there. Like, I'm upset that Tyrese Maxey doesn't get a call ever.
Yeah.
But they
That's
have,
what pisses me off.
I mean, they have replay, right, in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, are there coaches' challenges in basketball?
There was no call, so there's nothing to challenge. That's the problem.
But there are. You get one challenge. If you're successful, you keep it. If you are unsuccessful, you lose it and a timeout.
Because I'm just thinking, like, in hockey, there's goalie interference where, let's say, a play happens and it's not called. They score because their guy ran over the goalie. The coach can challenge for goalie interference. A non-call that wasn't called can be then overturned and called.
Yeah, there has to be a call to challenge.
Okay.
Yeah. So that happened. Game three is tonight. Tyrese Maxey was just named the NBA's most improved player, which is cool.
That's cool.
So it's a little bit of a bright spot.
He's a stud, man.
He's awesome.
He's just too good. I'm so happy they didn't get rid of him.
Yeah. And he'll get paid this offseason. So that is the state of the Sixers. Hope they just make it interesting.
Let's move on to the Phillies, shall we?
Sure.
Currently in second in the NL East, or behind the Braves by three games. Braves kind of keep extending their lead, which has been kind of standard in the last bunch of years.
Okay.
But they're in a playoff spot as we stand. They're 15-10. Only 284 games left in the season. They're winning right now 4-0.
Like right now?
Right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Beating teams they should beat. Let's see how they stack up against good talent. I am impressed, though, and I know we don't spend a lot of time on the Phillies, but I'd like to get your thoughts on, like, I am impressed with how long this core group of players has been together, and like what impact you think that has for a team. Like, you look at Stott and Castellanos and Realmuto and Harper and Nola, and I could just keep going. Did I say Stott already?
Yeah, he started with him.
Like, all these guys have been playing, Marsh, they've all been playing together for like a really long time. Like, that's gotta help them in some way, right? Because that just doesn't happen a lot in sports anymore.
Yeah, I would imagine it helps. I mean, I think a lot of what people talk about with the Phillies is their culture and their dugout and their team kind of chemistry. So the longer people stay together, I have to imagine that builds all of that, improves all of that. I think baseball and the contracts are different than like basketball, which definitely lends itself, with caps raised every year, with like player options being more used, definitely lends itself for people hopping around to get more money.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could argue that it leads to way less of what maybe the Phillies have in terms of that locker room camaraderie. So yeah, I would say it probably benefits.
I will say that camaraderie that they have makes them fun to watch.
Yeah.
If you guys ever feel so inclined to get involved.
Not yet.
Okay. Not even close to yet.
All right. Flyers are out. Yeah. Terrible. Imploded at the end of the season.
We already did that.
Moving on.
Yeah.
NFL draft tonight.
Yeah.
Okay. Who we like?
Couldn't tell you a single person in the draft.
All right. Cool. Yep. Let's hope they get somebody good.
All right, Coach's Corner. Today we are going to talk about a tweet from Thomas Kopelman. He tweeted a thread that he titled, Six Things You Should Not Focus on Financially. And we wanted to maybe react to it or add to it, because a lot of the things we discuss are things you should do. So we thought this was maybe a good topic to think through some of the things maybe that aren't worth your time, energy, or efforts. I'll just run through the seven he listed, and then we can talk about them individually or anything we want to add. So he talked about moving high-yield savings accounts for a slightly higher yield, trying to create multiple streams of income, best credit card strategies, complex investment products, leveraging 0% interest, timing the market, and cutting out the small things you enjoy. Any of them stand out to you guys?
The last one stood out to me, and I actually just came across an article maybe yesterday or today about that. Not about cutting out the small things. Like, this person was advocating to be mindful of, like, the Starbucks coffee. And so I guess disagreeing with Thomas. Mm-hmm. And I read the article, and I kind of, like, scoffed at it. Because the guy, I think the example he said was, you know, spending money on, like, useless things. Call it $26 a week on useless things. It's like $1,300 a year. And I just don't think $1,300 a year is going to change anyone's life. Mm-hmm. And the amount of time and the amount of dissatisfaction and disenjoyment, if that's even a word, that you have to experience because you spend time and energy to try to save $13 or $25 a week, it seems absolutely useless to me. So I 100% agree with that.
Mm-hmm. I do too. But asterisk is that there are people who love that, meaning, like, there are people who will drive the extra 5 minutes to their destination on a non-toll road to avoid paying the $3.40 mm-hmm. toll, and they feel a big win from doing that. So I just, the caveat to me is that there are people who just love cutting out the little nickels and dimes because it's just a big part of who they are.
I don't think it's a love for them. I think it's a disease.
Okay.
I know people that won't raise and lower their garage door more than they should because of the energy it spends, which is wild to me. Mm-hmm. My dad will drive to whatever different gas station to save 10 cents a gallon. Mm-hmm. What does 10 cents a gallon actually even work out to over 20 gallons? $2? Mm-hmm. That just does, it seems so insignificant. I find it like very, you know, I'd rather sit in my house at 84 degrees than put on the air conditioner because it's going to cost an extra, I don't even know.
Right.
Right. Let's close the lights because it's going to save us
cents.
It's like literally cents. Mm-hmm. That whole mindset. I'm not saying be wasteful, but our garage door goes up and down 50 times during the course of a day, like at least.
Yeah.
And I can't even imagine like telling my kids, whoa, don't open the garage. Walk in through the front door. It doesn't cost us any money if you go in through the front door.
Yeah.
Like, that's just wild to me.
Well, it's similar to the first one. He says moving high-yield savings accounts for slightly higher yield. So thinking about, you know, your Capital One account that's paying you 4.25, and then Ally has a high-yield savings account that's paying you 4.5.
Right.
And you're opening a new account. You're moving money for what is, in the grand scheme of things, very, very little return. So I think the mindset is one of disease feels strong, but in the examples that we're describing, maybe that is what it is.
But on number one, I would say, not to, you know, confuse people, but if you're getting 1% at your bank and it's 5% at Capital One, that's a different story.
Sure.
So like his point is, for 0.1%, don't bother. Which we agree with.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's spend some time on the seven streams of income, because I think that's a very popular mindset in today's world with influencers and social media and the internet and these like entrepreneurial people that are like, you need to just you need to develop different forms of income and passive income versus like when I hear that, it's like, okay, so you want seven streams of income, which means you're going to be crappy at seven different things. Like, who is an expert and just dialed in as a landlord, as a financial planner, as a real estate, like as an influencer on social media? Like, who's doing four different things exceptionally well and generating income from it? You're not optimizing your time. If you're really good at something, do that. Expand there. Find different sources of income there, not from a completely different activity. Like, that's just crazy to me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's like, I don't even know, I've never even heard of this seven streams thing, but I know what it's about. It's like, you should have three side hustles and a W-2 job, and then you should also own property in which you get that passive income. What? I mean, no, I agree with you. Like, it's just,
I'm
somebody
sure
has to work three jobs to make ends meet, that's different.
Yes.
But deliberately creating, I guess, diversification of your income and your cash flow, that's great in theory, but what?
I'm sure this is, this opinion that I have and that Mike has is very, like, people would disagree with this very strongly.
I think there's a camp of people who would disagree with it. And I think you're right in that a lot of it is kind of social media influenced, because you see people who have done all of the things you're describing, right? Whether it's like, they call it house hacking, right? For the real estate piece of it, or they have a side hustle beyond their W-2 income. So I think when those people have a platform that reaches other people, and they try to come off as like, if I could do it, anybody could do it kind of thing. Yeah, I think there's a camp of people who would see that and say, well, why can't I make that work? But when you frame it about your time, which is what you're describing, Jeff, and your ability to maybe not be as good at all of those things as you could or should be, or your ability to be a partner, a father, a mother, a friend, like have a life outside of these streams of income, like there's only so much time in a day. So I think that the vision of it and the reality of it are very disconnected. And the people who appear to make it work do so behind a screen that no one actually knows the success they may or may not be having. And I feel like that's a lot of what these things, how a lot of these things you shouldn't focus on get kind of forced onto us is through that microphone of social media. You hear one, two, or three people, right? Well, you have to move your savings account for a slightly higher yield. It's like a no-brainer. You're going to get more money over here. Like there's very few people who are just being real about these things and saying it's not a sustainable way to exist by trying to maximize all of these different areas of your life. For what?
Yeah.
I mean, like the credit card strategy one, it's another one. You could go onto Instagram or TikTok or you could Google it, like how to best use my credit card, how to pick the credit card that's going to give me the most X. Like how many people do I feel like I probably misuse some of my credit card points? Sure. Do I do that to the extent that it's going to keep me up at night or force me to spend time figuring out a better way to? No, it's just not worth my time.
Yeah.
But there's no shortage of people telling you that any of these things are worth the time and effort without truly knowing if they've had any success in any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, agree. I mean, I'm sure that if you spend a lot of time, you could open up multiple, you could have a strategy to open up multiple credit cards, transfer balances, get points for the initial sign up, and then, you know, spend that money, right, for the rewards or whatever, and continue to do that and come out ahead. You would.
Totally.
But is it worth it? Hell no.
No.
If my wife wants to do that, like spend hours upon hours doing that, that means I have to go pick up the kids from school. I have to make them dinner. I have to do the laundry, which means I can't be here working. So you're getting a benefit from it, but it's detracting from something. It has to detract from something else because it's all time related.
Yeah,
we don't have to spend any money on timing the market. We've beat that to death. If you're spending time trying to time the market, you're wasting your time because you're eventually going to not do as well as the market. So don't even bother. I agree 100% with his complex investment products. Like, there's so many things that are complex out there. And God, I want to say like 99 out of 100 of them are not advisable for most people to own. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a complex investment product or something like that that is in someone's best interest.
I can't think of a single one either.
No.
Not a one.
I mean, aren't hedge funds like really good?
Yeah, for the people who sell them and run them.
Don't they like beat the market?
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that why all rich people put all their money in hedge funds? Because they're like, the people are so smart and like you don't even know what they're doing, but you're just making, like they make a lot of money. Mm. I'm kind of poking the bear.
The only the ones that are consistently killing it don't want or even will take your money. It's all their own money.
Right.
So, I mean, it's all of them are just they're sold on the same basis, which is that this is something for the, well, whether it's the rich people or the exclusive investors who have it's all bullshit. And it's every one of the examples here, private equity, real estate syndications, permanent insurance or complex insurance products, they're all designed to pay the producers.
They're almost like directly correlated. Like the more complicated a product is, the more expensive it is, the more costly it is, and the less value the bottom line investor receives from it. And people just don't want to believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Simple. Doesn't sell.
It does not. Yeah. What was he talking about with leveraging 0% interest?
So the example he gave was when you're on Nordstrom and you get to check out and your cart is $450 and you can pay it off in incremental payments with, I think it's like Klarna is one of the platforms you can use. And his point was, you know, if you can't afford to buy something like that, that you'll need to split up over a couple of payments, then you shouldn't be buying it. The opposite of that would be, I think Mike used this as an example when we were prepping, like getting a car loan at 0% interest is in fact
like do that
a good right, yeah, a good opportunity. So larger purchases using 0% interest is pretty much a no-brainer, but leveraging it in what I mean, I guess they're maybe less consequential in terms of the purchase amount. Is just not really very responsible.
So good job, Thomas.
Are there any things that maybe he didn't list that come to mind to you guys that like shouldn't be the focus of people's financial priorities? Maybe social media because of comparison and how you're going to look at your friends' Instagram feeds and see them going and doing. And because of slight jealousy or FOMO, maybe committing to financially things that you just can't afford and it being difficult to say no, but avoiding social media or at least the lens of I want to be able to do everything everyone else is doing just might not be feasible. I think you took it as all of the different information on social media.
Yeah, and I think I would add to that. Like I had a meeting yesterday with a client trying to explain to her why I think doing a Roth conversion for some of her IRA each year is probably a good thing for her in the long run, probably a good thing for her daughter in the long run. And at the end of it, like, she got it, understood it, understood there was no, like, giant benefit to her immediately. And she's like, yep, let me think about it. I'm like, yeah, no problem. Do it. Don't do it. Your life isn't going to change one way or the other. What I will say is everyone you talk to is going to tell you you're crazy for doing it. Your CPA, your friend, because everybody has there in the back of their mind, why would you pay taxes when you don't have to pay taxes? So I would throw that in the category of stop taking advice or asking advice from people who know nothing about you. And I don't mean like they know your name and they know how many kids you have. Unless that person that you're asking for advice from has your tax return, has your goal list, has like your entire financial plan in front of them to like delve through, don't listen to anything they have to say. And so many people do that. They listen to, like, they have a conversation with someone and then they bring that back into our office and they're like, none of my friends are doing this. They told me not to do this. Do your friends, have they seen your budget? Do they know where your investments are? Do they know your effective and marginal tax bracket? Like, no. So why? Like, it drives me crazy.
I think that's a good one.
Me too, Meg.
So just real quick before we move, avoiding social media for financial information at all, obviously, but I would say media, period. Like all media. You know, I have friends who watch CNBC all the time, like every day. They watch Cramer or Josh Brown on there talking about stocks and talking about markets and maybe not aware what the business of media is.
Right.
And falling into the trap of, because that gets into your psyche. If you're listening to that stuff and, or paying attention to it and maybe thinking, this guy seems smart. He's calling for a 25% correction by year end. Like, all that stuff is so poison to the right things to do as from an investing standpoint. So I would just say never, ever, ever watch that stuff. Don't read the magazines if they still are out there. I'm not sure. Do they have magazines anymore?
I think they do.
Like, it's all the same poison. So.
So don't watch TV. Don't look at your phone and don't talk to your friends.
About financial stuff and investing.
Right. Like, well, it's the same in the medical field, right? Like, if there was something wrong with you physically, would you like go onto social media or like the mayoclinic.com to diagnose yourself? Or would you go see a freaking doctor and have them take your blood pressure and do blood work, right? Like, hook you up to an EKG.
Yeah.
Yes, you're having a heart attack. Oh, well, the mayoclinic.com said I have high cholesterol. Like,
my neighbor told me it wasn't a heart attack.
It's the same damn thing, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That was a good one, Mike. I appreciate that. Thank you for sharing.
All right. You want to move on?
Yeah.
We are going to discuss an article called My Parents Have a Lot of Stuff in Their House and I Don't Want Most of It. This is from Allison Pohl with the Wall Street Journal. Allison's article covers a topic we often discuss with our clients and ourselves, which is getting rid of things. Whether you're just decluttering, planning to downsize to a smaller home, or going through a deceased family member's things, the process and approach to getting rid of our shit can be overwhelming.
Yeah, this is a biggie, man. We deal with this a lot.
A lot, yeah.
And certainly not just like with our clients. I mean, I deal with it personally. Humans are just gatherers of things. We just collect stuff, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not talking hoarders because I wouldn't consider myself and my family like hoarders. But like, we collect a lot of things that should just be given away or just thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle with it, like, from the standpoint of, I certainly don't keep too much stuff, but I definitely have a box in the basement that has like stuff in it. Like, when I say, I'm crazy for sharing a story with you guys. Like, I was going through it when we moved from our old home to our new home, and I stumbled across this box. I'm like, started going through it. Like, there were notes that I always like, I passed to like people in like college classes.
Oh, wow.
And back. Then I found a card from signed by and with notes from all of my fraternity brothers telling me like how good of a dad I'm going to be when they all found out that like my girlfriend was having a baby when I was a senior in college. Like it was really cool to still have that. And I don't think I threw it out. Like, I think I still have that stuff in a box. How do you get rid of that? Now, I don't want my kids to keep it because it has no impact on them, right? Like, chuck it. Maybe Kayla will keep that card.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, it should just all get trashed.
I think that's what keeps people in the position is the nostalgia and the sentimental value of a lot of things, whether it's cards, whether it's family heirlooms. I think that's where a lot of the challenge exists because you've spent years accumulating things that somehow have like an emotional meaning to us. So I think it's very natural to like to not know what to do, right? To understand maybe like logically that this is a card, that the words are meaningful, but I don't need the card. But then emotionally, it's like, but I want the card. Like,
what was weird was I didn't even remember that.
Right,
like,
right.
I forgot about that happening.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later, I was like, holy shit, man, they gave me a card. Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So it was neat to have it to be reminded.
But if you didn't have it, you would have never missed it.
Correct.
Yeah.
So the stuff, the clutter, you know what one of the most successful businesses has been over the past number of years is self-storage units, right?
I don't doubt that.
And you could say, well, what the, like, but it makes sense in this context because, you know, think about the people that even in their apartment or their house, it's still not enough room.
Right.
It's still not enough room. They have to rent another space to put their stuff because that is not just transitory people. That's just a lot of that's permanent storage. Mm-hmm. And they're everywhere. Like mattress stores. They're everywhere.
Right, right.
But I can see storage has a usefulness. But I mean, it is crazy that there is so much stuff out there and it's not just sitting in people's houses.
And a lot, like the article, like a lot of it is things, right?
Yeah.
Like it's china, it's collectibles, it's these things that nobody wants, and some of them can take up a lot of space, right? Like if you're like a baseball fan, baseball fans are crazy. They have bats and jerseys and pictures and baseballs, like hundreds and thousands of them.
Train people?
Trains, yeah. Like
the amount of space some of these things take.
We just, as humans, we have to be better about like going through that stuff and saying, okay, when I'm dead, who's going to want this? No one. Then it just keep one baseball, one bat, donate the rest, sell the rest. Do you just can't keep it.
So there was in recent years a lot of predictions that a lot of the boomers were going to be downsizing and moving out of their, you know, four bedroom, too big of a house, and that hasn't really happened. And one of these wrote a letter into the journal saying, yeah, your article misses the biggest factor for staying put, how much work it is to move.
Right.
I've been living in my four-bedroom house for 39 years. Do you have any idea how much stuff we have? It would take at least a year to declutter and pack.
It does.
And they're like, we're not going anywhere.
Right.
Plus, if there's a cheap mortgage there, there's that.
Sure.
So there's a bunch of factors.
I would – sorry, guy, Mike.
It would take a year if you did it. Hire somebody. Yeah. And go away for the weekend. I tell my parents all the time, my mom is definitely like borderline hoarder. I mean, like finger painting pictures that we did when we were in kindergarten, like pieces of paper hoarding. Yeah. Like I have told them multiple times, I'm not dealing with this when you're both gone. Like you're going to go away. I'm going to put a dumpster in the driveway and then you're going to come home and shit is just going to be gone.
Yeah.
Like, if there's anything that you absolutely need me to keep, tell me. But if it's the china cabinet, it's gone. Mm-hmm. None of us want it. None of us will use it. Like, I think it's the emotional attachment that makes it so difficult for people to declutter. If you hire somebody who has no attachment to your shit, it could happen way quicker than that.
Yeah.
That'd be a good side hustle. for someone.
One of the seven streams of income. I think part of the, like, a difference in maybe generations with this too is, and I said this to you guys when we were prepping, like home ownership, owning a bigger space, leading to just accumulating more stuff because you have more places to put it away. Mm-hmm. I've moved like apartments, houses 5 times since I've graduated college. So there's been multiple opportunities to like get rid of shit.
Yeah.
Like the purging process when you're going from A to B happens easier, that maybe you haven't had as much time to develop like a want to keep things, or you're going to a different space that's smaller or bigger and you don't need to keep the same shit. But I feel like buying of the house, staying in the house for 40 years is absolutely going to lead to just excess accumulation. Whereas moving from place to place, maybe smaller spaces generally, it maybe delays it. It doesn't keep it from happening, but it maybe doesn't happen as quickly.
I don't even think most people want those special things, right? Like they have a Leonard Niemeyer painting that we're going to leave to Bobby. Well, I guarantee, like, Bobby doesn't care. I don't care if it's $5,000. He probably doesn't want it.
Yeah.
He's just going to sell it because it's ugly as shit and he's not going to hang it in his house. Maybe on the exception, right? Like the El Camino that like grandpa gave to dad, dad restored. Now that's going to his gearhead son or daughter. Maybe. But again, I think 9 times out of 10, like what they're going to their local auto body. What can you get me for this? Just get rid of it, man, and benefit from, yep, dad, sell the El Camino yourself, take the $20,000 and go on a trip, man.
Yeah.
And that's what they mentioned in the article. Like this generation is more about doing things and stuff. Although I still think like everyone, like you said, Meg, if you own a home, you got way too much crap in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way that I deal with like clothing, which there is no emotional attachment to, but I still like struggle like, oh, it's a good shirt. Like, why don't I?
I might wear that again.
So that's the conversation I have with that. So I go, I might wear that again. And then I go, when is the last time you wore that in the last year? And I go, never. Done.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah.
Get rid of it. When's the last time you used that China plate, Mom? Well, you know, Thanksgiving once a year. Gone. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. We got to purge, man. Yeah. We should have, instead of all these stupid holidays where kids have off for whatever, we should just schedule purge holidays. Keep the kids home from school. Everybody, like, go through your room and, like, you have to purge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything more on that?
Purge, people. Purge.
Yeah. All right. Top 5 titles. And we didn't limit this. So movies, shows, songs, groups with good or bad in the name.
How did you guys do with this?
I had to think about each of those categories
separately.
Songs,
movies, shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Books. I didn't find many books.
I didn't do a single book.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't just think of the word good and come up with things. I had to think of movies specifically, songs specifically, artists specifically.
I'll go.
Okay.
Number 5, I have Goodfellas. I mean, it's a classic movie.
Yeah.
Number 4, I have Good People, the song by Jack Johnson.
Okay.
Number 3, I have another song. It Was a Good Day by Ice Cube.
Okay.
Number 2, I have Bad by Michael Jackson. Iconic. The song, Bad.
Yeah.
Okay. And number 1, neither one of you have ever heard of it, is the movie Very Bad Things.
On my list.
Shut up. Really?
On my list.
I mean, it's my number 1. It's such a great movie. Christian Slater.
Things. Yeah, it's really like dark.
Is that the one where they have the bachelor party?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Yeah. It's a great movie. What's her name's in it? The blonde that was in Something About Mary, wasn't she?
Cameron.
Cameron Diaz is in it. It's
Very Bad Things.
Very Bad Things. It's worth a watch if you haven't watched it. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, Mike.
2 I had on my Do you want me to go?
Sure.
Okay. Mine are mostly movies. But I'll give you the song, and it's also a song called Bad, but it's not Michael Jackson.
Okay.
It's a U2 song.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't follow them at all.
All right.
They're on your iPhone, whether or not you like it.
I know.
I've got A Few Good Men, the movie.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Hate Tom
good
Cruise.
Movie. I know, but the movie was good.
Yeah,
it was you good. Know, got to give it that. I'm also going with, I don't love this movie, but Good Will Hunting.
I had it as a backup.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
I just can't stand J-Lo's boyfriend. What's his name?
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck.
Really? Just... At that time? I get it now, but then?
Ugh, his face just annoys me.
He's on. I got Good Times, the TV series.
That's a good one.
Classic.
Yeah.
And then last, and definitely not like my first, it's not. This is in no order, but I got Good Morning Vietnam, Robin Williams.
Okay. I thought about that one.
Yeah.
Okay. I have the movie For a Good Time Call. It's a phone sex. It's a movie about a phone sex operator. It's hysterical.
Is that older?
No, it's pretty new.
Okay.
Two chicks who like can't pay their rent, and that's how they decide to that's make money.
It's a great concept for a movie.
The Good Place. It's a TV show. One of my faves.
What's her name?
Kristen Bell. Kristen Bell.
She's in the like Carvana commercials where
yes.
Hold.
Her and yeah, her and her husband Jax. Yeah. I'm a big Olivia Rodrigo fan. She has a song called Good For You.
Okay. Yep.
Good Life by Kanye West.
Yep.
Don't love Kanye. Backup. Love that song.
I don't like him. That's why I was a backup.
And then my like number one, number whatever, Super Bad.
Oh, that's a good one. Man. I should have thought of that.
Yeah.
Surprised that one. I assumed that was going to be on all of our lists.
Yeah. It's wow. Such a great movie.
Yeah.
Good list, Meg.
Yeah. Very cool. Good.
All right. Well, that's 100, guys.
Thanks for listening to our 100th episode.
See ya.
Bye.